Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fundamentally Mormon. This is your Mormon fundamentalist, Mark Lichtenwalter, coming to you live on this 24th day of July 2018. The guest call-in number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. We're going to be getting into an official declaration of an interview with Apostle Grand Richard, which was given in 1978. I believe this has to do with blacks in the priesthood. I haven't read this particular pamphlet before. I don't exactly agree with everything the church has to say about this, one way or the other. I'm just reading the pamphlets in this book. So with that being said, let's get right into it. The 1978 official declaration, an interview with Apostle LeGrand Richards. In support of the premise that the 1978 official declaration was not a thus saith the Lord revelation, is an interview Apostle LeGrand Richards had with Wesley P. Walters and Chris Vallecos. This interview was taped and later published, with most of it included here, Walters. On this revelation of the priesthood to the Negro, I've heard all kinds of stories. I've heard that Christ appeared to the apostles. I've heard... I've heard that Joseph Smith appeared. And I heard another story that Spencer Kimball had a concern about this for some time, and that simply shared it with the apostles, and they decided that it was the right time to move in that direction. Are any of those stories true, or are they all Richards? Well, the last one is pretty true, and I might tell you what provoked it in a way. Down in Brazil, there is so much Negro blood in the population there that it is hard to get leaders that don't have Negro blood in them. We just built a temple down there. It's going to be dedicated in October. All of those people with Negro blood in them have been raising the money to build that temple. If we don't change, then they can't even use it. Well, Brother Kimball worried about, and he prayed a lot about it, and he asked each one of us of the 12 if we would pray. And he did, and we did, that the Lord would give him the inspiration to know what the will of the Lord was. Then he invited each one of us in his office individually, because you know when you are in a group, you can't always express everything that's in your heart. You're part of a group, see. So he interviewed each one of us personally to see how we felt about it, and asked us to pray about it. Then he asked each one of us to hand in all of the references we had for or against that proposal. See, he was thinking favorably about giving the colored people the priesthood. Then we had a meeting where we meet every week in the temple. That's on Thursday, every Thursday morning. And he discussed it as a group, and we discussed it as a group together, and then we prayed about it in our prayer circle. And then we held another prayer circle after the close of that meeting. And he, President Kimball, led in the prayer, praying that the Lord would give us the inspiration that we needed to do the thing that would be pleasing to him and for the blessing of his children. Let's see. And then the next Thursday, we meet every Thursday. I was actually married to President Hinckley's great niece and met with him a bunch. In fact, well, I'm not going to get into that story. I want to get through this. I was going to talk about L. Tom Perry coming to meet me, and actually calling my state president on the Thursday after the meeting where they received my I was like a 10 or 20 page letter. I don't remember. It was a pretty long letter with descriptions of my experience with Heavenly Father and Jesus Christ in the temple, where I was taken into the Holy of Holies in the spirit. It was an out of body experience. I wasn't praying about it. I was anti-Mormon at the time when this happened, and it just completely confused me. But L. Tom Perry, after their Thursday meeting, was given instruction by President Gordon B. Hinckley to actually interview me. And he interviewed me. Actually, the state president called me up and he said, "Hey, I need you to be at church. I need you to be 30 minutes early, and I need you to be sitting in the pews and ready. Somebody wants to meet you, and you need to be there." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I didn't know who it was. No idea. And so me and my, at the time, she was my girlfriend, later became my wife and then my ex-wife. She had Asperger's. And at the time, I was undiagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, and we triggered each other, but we loved each other so much. But it was just not a healthy relationship for either one of us. Anyway, but we were both sitting in the back pew as instructed, and I felt the spirit so strong. And like when I feel the spirit really strong, like I turn beet red. And this particular day, it was just like burning like fire. And my ex looks at me and she says, "What's wrong with you? Your ears are turning purple and your face is beet red." And I said, "I don't know. I feel the spirit really strong." And I remember as I said that, I heard the doors in the foyer open and close, and I looked up to my left over my shoulder, which was where the door was, and in comes L. Tom Perry with this big, huge grin on his face, and he wants to talk with me. And so we sat there and talked for a while, and it was funny because nobody knew he was coming. So, like, everybody's in the singles ward, and they're all coming in, and here's this apostle, the leader of the LDS church, sitting here talking with me, and we're having a conversation. And like, we didn't go into another room or anything. It was a really good conversation. And right before the meeting starts, you know, he slaps me on the back and he said, "Well, God's the one that chooses his prophets, because we sure don't," which really confused me at the time. But I understand why he said that now. Anyway, and then, like, he stayed for the meeting, and he said, "Everybody give your talks like you would, and but give me a little time at the end to talk to you guys." And so, you know, everybody talked, and, like, I remember one of my friends getting up and speaking, and L. Tom Perry, like, standing up and, like, walking over to him. You know, he's up in the stand, and behind the pulpit, and he grabs him by the shoulder and he's like, "That's right. This young man is right. You guys need," and it was great. And then during the hymn, the closing hymn, he walked out and got in his car, I guess, and left. And after the meeting, after the closing prayer, everybody came over. "What was he talking to you about?" And like, I've met L. Tom Perry in passing several times, because I used to go to music in the spoken word a lot. Like, I was the activities coordinator in my singles ward, and one of the things that we did every single Sunday for like 8 or 9 or 10 months was we would meet by the flagpole just directly east of the Salt Lake Temple, directly west of the tabernacle. And right before the music in the spoken word started, we'd all go in and sit down and enjoy the Mormon Tabernacle Choir and sometimes the orchestra at Temple Square. And like, sometimes they would have really awesome guests come in. That woman that wrote Murder, or that was the star in Murder, She Wrote, that sang for the position of Belle, or not Belle, but Mrs. Teapot in Beauty and the Beast. Like, she came one time, and like, it was awesome. I really miss those days. They were so spiritual. But anyway, my tangents are just ridiculous. I see something about Thursday, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that reminds me of a story. I'll get back into it. And then the next Thursday, we meet every Thursday, the presidency came with this little document written out to make the announcement to see how we'd feel about it and present it for in written form. And it's kind of funny because, like, the one guy that was, like, really racist, Marky Peterson, they actually sent him out of town when they did all of this, so that, because you have to have a unanimous vote to do these type of things. Well, you used to. I don't know if you have to anymore. But anyway, so they sent him out of town so he wouldn't, you know, stop it. But, you know, this whole thing came about because of Jimmy Carter's, who was the president of the United States, threatened to remove the 501c3 status of the LDS Church, the tax-exempt status, if they discriminated against black people. So the church caved in, and that's really what spawned all of this. If it wasn't for that, the church, I don't know if the church would have caved in by now. Maybe they would have, but in 1978, they wouldn't have. So, and I just find it really interesting that the church continues to say that the Canaanites are the black people, which I'm not sure if I agree with, but let's just say that they were. In Zechariah chapter 14, it says, in the millennial day, that the Canaanites will no longer be allowed in the house of the Lord. So if the church is correct about blacks being the Canaanites, then why would they allow them to go into the temple where God would have to correct that later and cause it so that they couldn't be in the temple? But whatever, that's their thing, not mine. I just think it's interesting that Canaan, the son of Ham, who was the son of Noah, was the one that was cursed with the priesthood. And I think that the Cain was cursed as well. I know Cain was, but I'm not sure if it was a priesthood curse or what. But in Genesis chapter 9, I think it is, Canaan is cursed. Well, the thing about it is, Ham had four sons who are all the children of Egyptus, who was a black woman who came through the flood with Ham, who was a white man. And his four sons all were black. Canaan was the one that was cursed. So were the other sons cursed? I can't remember what the record is, but it says that the other three sons didn't want anything to do with Canaan or his posterity because they didn't want the curse to come upon their children. So does that mean that only some black people are cursed and others aren't? Or is this just some false doctrine made up by Brigham Young? Maybe it was Joseph Smith. I don't know. I mean, I've read so much on this topic. I haven't gotten revelation on it. The only thing I've gotten is you don't give anybody the priesthood unless you get revelation that you should give them the priesthood. So I don't. And if I get revelation to give a man who is black the priesthood, then I will. And if I don't, then I won't. I've gotten revelation to give my wife the priesthood. She has been chosen by God to restore that to the earth, the matriarchal priesthood. And she is not only a prophetess, because she has had many dreams and visions and revelations herself. She doesn't talk about them, but she is an eyewitness of Jesus Christ, just like I am. And Joseph Smith. Now, I haven't met Joseph Smith myself, but she has, in a vision, in a dream or a night dream or a vision or something to that effect when she was like a teenager. So anyway, but yeah, my wife has the matriarchal priesthood. She's been ordained as an apostle, which she is, and she is a prophetess, which she is. Anyway, continuing on, let's see. Well, some of the members of the 12 suggested a few changes in the announcement, and then in our meeting there we all voted in favor of it, the 12 and the presidency. One member of the 12, Mark Peterson, this gives me just a chuckle because he's like the most racist guy on the 12 at that time, and he would have been, you know, he would have said no, and they have to have the unanimous decision. So, you know, they waited until he's down in South America to do this, to get it to pass, which I'm pretty sure he was irate. You know, what are you guys doing? In the scriptures it says, Brigham said this. Heber C. Kimball said this. You guys, you know, because according to Brigham, you weren't supposed to give the blacks the priesthood until all of the other sons of Adam received it, which came at, which would come at the end of the millennium, according to Brigham Young. Anyway, so one member of the 12, Mark Peterson, was down in South America, but Brother Benson, our president, had arranged to know President Benson was actually president of the Quorum of the 12, while Spencer Kimball was president of the church, right? Had arranged to know where he could be reached by phone. And right while we were in that meeting in the temple, Brother Kimball talked to Brother Peterson and read this article. That's interesting. Read him this article, and he, Peterson, approved of it. That's the story you want to put out, I guess. It's just interesting that they waited till he was gone. So, Walters, what was the date? Would that have been the 1st of June or something? Richards, that was the first Thursday, I think, of May or June, At least that's about when it was. And then after we all voted in favor of it, we called another meeting for the next morning, Friday morning at 7 o'clock. All of the other general authorities, that includes the 70s, Quorums, and the Patriarch, which they've done away with that office, Patriarch of the Church, what is his name? I can't remember what his name is. He died in 2013, right before the authority of the church was removed by God, by myself, who I have the authority to do that. Of course, I didn't understand why at the time God told me to do that, and it's prophesied in Daniel chapter 12 that in the last days that God would scatter the power or the priesthood of all the holy people, and that's what happened in July of 2013 when God told me to lift both my arms to the square and sever the power of all the holy people. Anyway, which I did in Bliss, Idaho, by the way. Details, let's see here. And the patriarch of the church and the presiding bishop, and it was presented to them, and they all had an opportunity to express themselves, and there was a few of the brethren that were out presiding in the missions, and so the 12 were appointed to interview each of them. I had to interview Brother Lee and read him the article and asked him his feelings. He was thrilled because he labored down there in Brazil and he knew what it would mean for those people. So every member of the general authorities, to a man, approved it before the announcement went out. That's not true either, because there was a guy that was excommunicated because he made such a big fuss about it when it was announced in general conference. Like, flipped out. Like, I'm pretty sure you can find videos of it on YouTube. Anyway, he had a letter from our colored man up in Ogden. Who's their colored man? He was a member of the church, and he said, if the Lord is willing to let me have my wife and children in this life, why wouldn't he be willing to let me have them in the next life? That makes sense, doesn't it? You know, the Lord gave a revelation to the prophet Joseph Smith where he said that there is a law irrevocably decreed in the heavens before the foundations of the earth were laid, upon which all blessings are predicated, and no blessing can be obtained except by obedience to the law upon which it is predicated, Doctrine and Covenants, section 130, verse 20. Well, all that means in that, if you want wheat, you've got to plant wheat, doesn't it? If you want corn, you've got to plant corn. Well, if you plant wheat and get a harvest, and the colored man plants wheat and takes good care of it, why isn't he as much entitled to the harvest as I am, you see? So we figured the same for the spiritual blessings. If the colored man lives as good as I do, serves the Lord, and so forth, why isn't he as much entitled to the blessings as I am? You see that. It's been a united decision. There have been no adverse comments by anyone other than in California. Richards. What? Walters. Intermarriage is that in view too. So like back in the day, intermarriage between black men and white women were looked upon with great disdain. The reason for that is because the curse of the black man would be put upon the children of the white woman. So this is the way I understand it, by revelation given to me. Every woman has children that are assigned to her before the foundations of the earth. Sometimes things happen so that the children cannot go to the correct parent, and then the child will go on to somebody else within that family group. Like our youngest daughter, she is just the spitting image of my sister Stacy. And when my wife saw her the first time just after giving birth, she looked at her like, "Who are you? I don't know you." And we love her to death. We absolutely love my little girl. She's 3 years old. But she is Stacy's, my sister's, child. She was assigned to her. I know that. Stacy cannot have children anymore because her husband decided to make it impossible, whatever, vasectomy, I think is what it was, which is what happened to my grandma, too. My grandma wanted more children. She had this urge. She knew that she should have more children, and my grandpa went and got a vasectomy behind her back. And so I had to be born to my mother in the family group. I was meant to be born by my grandmother back in the early 60s. I was born in 77, as soon as I could come down. So, to my mother. So, which should have been my sister. And, like, we all know that in my family. And, in fact, before my grandfather died, we all wanted to have me sealed because they raised me anyway. My grandparents raised me. My grandfather was my father. And my grandmother, she's still alive. She's 95 years old, and she's still alive. And we just went up to visit her up in Logan not too long ago. But she's my mom. My mother, my biological mother, I look at her as my mother too, but she's more like a sister than a mother. That's because I wasn't meant to be her child. I was meant to be my grandmother's child. Anyway, how did we get on this topic? That's why it takes me forever to get through these things. Let's see here. Anyway, but the intermarriage of the child. Oh, I know how we got on this topic. So, if a child who is one of the elect, so there was three different divisions in the war in heaven. When I saw the vision of it, what happened was when the two plans were presented by Messiah ben David, who we call Yeshua HaMashiach, or Yeshua ben Yosef, or actually Yeshua ben Yehovah, son of the Father, only begotten of the Father. And then Lucifer had a plan as well. He was the light bearer, he was the highest angel under Jesus. He was meant to be the second witness, who I actually took his place when he rebelled. Anyway, but Jesus presented the plan, or Yeshua presented the plan of salvation, and Lucifer presented a plan of damnation, which meant that he would take away the free agency of the people, but that they would all come back into the presence of God, which meant that you wouldn't be able to learn through your mistakes or through experience, because it would be complete control. which prevented the learning of the children of God. Like, you learn more when you're allowed to make your decisions and have free agency. But the people who never, ever followed after Lucifer and always stuck with the plan of salvation straight from the get-go, which at first were, relatively few in number, those are the elect of God. Those are the ones that are born in this dispensation that are allowed to receive all of the higher blessings because they are being given the reward of the choices that they made in the pre-existence. I saw the elect and the more valiant among them go among the others and preach and testify and teach and exhort for the reasons of why the plan of salvation was the correct choice. As these people came over, they received a certain limitation. They were not the elect of God, but they were given forgiveness, and they, and they were chose. They come in. So Noah had three sons. The first son, Japheth, would have the greatest amount of children, and then Shem, who is Melchizedek, who is the Melchizedek, which means a king and a priest, under him, the elect were born through him. The elect race was born through him. And it's all racial. This division is all racial. I saw that they who held out and did not want to follow the plan of salvation, but eventually repented when they saw they were going to lose, they became the children of Ham. And they who held out and just refused until up until the last bit, they became the children of Cain, who according to the Bible, Genesis chapter 9, would be a servant of servants to the other children, the other posterity, to all of Japheth and all of Shem's children, which they have been. So, that, and then they who just never repented and always just stuck with Lucifer. Well, when he was cast out and his name was stripped from him, to call him Lucifer is extremely wrong. You shouldn't call him Lucifer. Like, I know that in Isaiah it says Lucifer, but Lucifer is a Latin word which means light bearer, which actually it's taken from a word in Hebrew which means light bearer, right? Hillel, I think it is. But that word, that title, light bearer, was stripped from him and he was cast out. And he became Hasatan, or Satan, which means accuser of the brethren. The accuser, that's what his name means. It is a title. It is not his actual name. Just like Lucifer was his title before he was stripped of his office. He was stripped of his office. So, then those that fell with him, those third of the host of heaven, they became the demons. So we've got 60 seconds on the live streaming portion of the radio program. We're going to find a good place to stop because I got to get Chuck in here. I'm in Salina, Utah, and I'm going to head up the hill and get some more coal truck driver. The guest calling number is 917-889-8827. That's 917-889-8827. And I will post this in Zion's Redemption Bookstore on Facebook and in my various Facebook groups that I run. All right, let's see here. Walters, intermarriage, is that in view too? Richards, well, no. We've never recommended it before this decision was reached. We've always recommended that people live within their own race. The Japanese ought to marry Japanese. The Chinese ought to marry Chinese. The Hawaiians ought to marry Hawaiians. And the colored people ought to marry colored. Walters. And that would be your position on that.
Richards, that is still our position, but they are entitled to the temple blessings and the sealing of the wives to them. It's all conditioned on their living. Now, if they live right and they're devoted and they're good, clean living, why shouldn't they get the blessings? Walters, now, when President Kimball read this little announcement in the staff meeting with the general authorities, was that the same thing that he released to the press? Yes, Richards, yes. Walters, there wasn't a special document as a revelation that he had and wrote down? Richards, we discussed it in our meeting. What else should we say besides the announcement? And we decided that that was sufficient. So they didn't get revelation. They just decided to do this without, you know, I guess they felt like they were inspired, whatever, but they were inspired by Jimmy Carter, who was about to pull their 501c3 status and seize all their assets. That no more needed to be said. Walters, was that the letter you sent out to the various wards, Richards, and to the church and to the newspapers? Yes. That's why I call it a to whom it may concern manifesto, not a thus saith the Lord. Walters, will that become part of Scripture? Richards, yes. I've already thought in my own mind of the suggestion that we add it to the Pearl of Great Price, the fourth book of the LDS Scriptures, just like the last two revelations that we just added, that were just added. Walter, at that point, is there a special reason why to add it to the Pearl of Great Price rather than the Doctrine and Covenants? Is it just more convenient to put it there instead of adding another number or something? Richards, I don't know that we've discussed the reason which book it should go in, but the Pearl of Great Price was written and assembled later than the Doctrine and Covenants. My grandfather, Franklin D. Richards, was one that organized the Pearl of Great Price. When we discussed it in our meetings, we didn't discuss whether it should go in the Doctrine and Covenants or the Pearl of Great Price. We just discussed how it would be to those two revelations, how it would be to have those two revelations in the Pearl of Great Price. Walters, will this affect your theological thinking about the Negro as being less valiant in the pre-existence? How does this relate? Have you thought that through? Richard, some time ago the brethren decided that we should never say that. We don't know just what the reason was. Paul said the Lord hath before appointed the boundaries of the habitations of all men for to dwell upon the face of the earth. And he so determined that before we were born, which is what I was talking about in that vision that I was shown. He who knows why they were born with black skin or white and so on and so forth will just have to wait, Walters. Is there still a tendency to feel that people are born with black skin because of some previous situation, or do we consider that black skin is a sign any more of anything inferior in the sense of the word? Richards, well, we don't want to get rid of that as doctrine. Think of it as you will. You know, Paul said, quote, now we see in part, and we know in part, and we see through a glass darkly. When that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. Then we will see as we are seen and know as we are known. Paraphrase of 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12, unquote. Now, the church's attitude today is to prefer to leave it until we know. The Lord has never indicated that black skin came because of being less faithful. Now, the church's attitude today is to prefer to leave it until we know. The Lord has never indicated that the black skin came because of being less faithful. Now, the Indian, we know why he has changed, don't we? The Book of Mormon tells us that he has a dark skin, but his has a promise that through faithfulness that they shall become white a white and delightsome people. And anybody who wants to like check this out, like I Rob K did a really cool blog on the Mormon Yeshiva, and I did a video on YouTube about this. If you want to go check that out, you can find me at Messiah Ben Joseph. Excuse me. Messiah Ben Joseph or youtube.com/user/ Goddess My Compass. One of my videos is entitled White and Delightsome, and it talks about the Hebrew meaning of that phrase, actually, which isn't as racist as people might think it is. Anyway, but I'm going to get into that on this podcast. Anyway, Walters, will this new revelation, I think he means now with this new revelation, has it brought any new insight or new ways of looking at the book of Abraham? Because I think traditionally it is thought of the curse of Cain coming through the Canaanites on the black skinned people and therefore denying the priesthood. Richards, we considered that with all the fors and against, and decided that with all of that, if they lived their lives and did the work, that they were entitled to their blessings. Walters, but you haven't come up with any new understanding of the book of Abraham. I just wondered whether there would be a shift in that direction. Is the recent revelation in harmony with past past prophets have taught of when the Negro should receive the priesthood? Richards, well, they have held out the thought that they would ultimately get the priesthood, which is so deceitful. Oh, yeah, Brigham said at the end of the millennium, right? But they never determined the time for it, which is complete and utter BS. I'm sorry. Yeah, it is. Just deal with it. And so when this situation that we face down in Brazil, or President Kimball, Brother Kimball, actually Jimmy Carter, Brother Kimball worried about it a lot, how the people are so faithful and devoted. The president of the Relief Society of the stake is a colored woman down there in one of the stakes. So what? She doesn't hold the priesthood. Anyway, like they can hold callings, back in 1977 when I was born. And before that, they just couldn't go to the temple, which there's a prohibition for the Canaanites in the temple according to the book of Zechariah, which is in the Tanakh or the Old Testament. Whatever. Anyway, if they do the work, why it seems like that the justice of the Lord would approve of giving them the blessings. Now, it's all conditional upon the life that they live, isn't it, Walters? Well, I thank you for clarifying that for me because, you know, out in the streets out there, there have been at least 5 to 10 different stories about the way this happened. Richards, well, I've told you exactly what happened. Walters, right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it, Richards. If you quote me, will you be telling the truth? If you quote me, you'll be telling the truth. Walters. Okay, well, fine. You don't mind if we quote you then? Richards, no. The interview continued for 10 more minutes, but nothing more was said with respect to the 1978 Negro Revelation. Published by Bob White, Box 31883, Phoenix, Arizona, 85046. Included in the next few pages are the copies of 4 interesting letters between Chris Velikos and Elder LeGrand Richards that followed their personal interview. It gives another phone number, 358 West, 170 North, Orem, Utah, 84057, September 11th, 1978. Elder LeGrand Richards. Anyway, that's the end of that. I'm just going to see if I can separate this real quick. And when I come back on, probably tomorrow, we'll finish reading that particular Maybe we'll finish it. I don't know. I haven't even read this thing before, so this is all interesting to me. I've read other things about these things, but it's not that. So, excuse me. Let's see here. We don't have any phone calls, so I don't have to answer any questions, which is fine with me. We're gonna have to figure out how to go into pay for this full-time thing, because Blog Talk just came up with this thing, and I don't know whether it's 30 hours or if it is 100 hours, but I only have so much time I can use the free podcasting, and then I have to pay for the service, which is $39 a month, which I will pay for. I just have to try to budget out the money to do that because we don't get any help with this program. I don't get any help from anyone. I'm just doing this on my own. I want to learn, and I want to teach, and I figure if I'm going to read this stuff, then I might as well be sharing this stuff. Like when I was in college, I used to read. I drove truck down in St. George, and I went to Dixie State University down there. And I nuts. I used to drive every other night and sleep every other night, and I'd be awake every day for class. And so, like, I had to really pack in, and I only had four classes. It wasn't a big deal, but I had to really pack in any chance I could get to study. So as I drove for Barney Trucking down in St. George, I drove double belly dumps, and we hauled gypsum to Las Vegas, where they make it into sheetrock and other things. On the road going out to Pahrump, a little factory called Blue Diamond, and Georgia Pacific was one of them, and Apex. Anyway, so I would drive every other night, and I would record in my study time reading the books. And then I would listen to it while I was driving. Well, that's why I do this, because I read these things, I share them with everybody. I also listen to them to make sure the audio is good, but I listen to them, and sometimes I go back and I listen to old things that I haven't thought about for a while, just because I enjoy listening, not to my own voice, but to the things that are being said. That's why I read it on these programs, and interject my opinion and my commentary into there as well. And maybe I might be right, and maybe I might be wrong. I know that the visions and revelations that I've had are right, but I speculate about a lot of things just like everyone else. So until I get revelation on something, I don't put my foot down. But if I study it out and I'm like, well, I'm pretty sure that this is the way it was. Like this whole thing about Canaanites being not allowed into the temples in the millennium. Well, yeah, Zechariah said it because Jehovah said it. And Jehovah, or Jehovah is the English word, whatever. Like he said these things. So I believe these things. And if the blacks are the Canaanites, then they will not be allowed in the temple in the millennium. Until, as Brother Brigham said, which if he's right or wrong, I don't know. But Brother Brigham said that they would not receive the priesthood or the temple blessings until the end of the millennium. And that was their curse for their choices in the pre-existence. Because there's consequences to your actions. In this life, in the life before this, in the spirit world, there's consequences. That's why everybody has different circumstances in their life, and there's different races and all of that. So anyway, I'm going to leave it at that. Like I said, you can find these at Zion's Redemption Bookstore page on Facebook. You can also find these on Blog Talk Radio by searching "More Fundamentally Mormon" or "The Mormon Fundamentalist." My stuff will pop up, and you can also find my old programs, which there's 461 of them, on blogtalkradio.com/thekingdomofgodornothing or the last 200 episodes, which they're all between 2 to 3 hours a piece, on my program, on iTunes, The Kingdom of God or Nothing. So anyway, that concludes this episode, this lesson, and we will be back on maybe tomorrow, maybe not. We'll see what happens. And Shabbat Shalom, Baruch Hashem, blessed be Yehovah, blessed be Yeshua, our Redeemer. And I just thank God for his plan of salvation. And I say these things in the name of Yeshua. Amen.